Please tell me something from the class this morning.
So what, hopefully
by the end of the class we'll quickly summarize Rishabdev Maharaj's teachings from those verses 1 through 27, I believe, in the fifth chapter. Because at the end of the sixth chapter, and Krishna willing will complete the sixth chapter today, Prabhupada at the end of his purport gives a summary of what we are actually to learn from the teachings of Rishabdev. Very concisely he speaks it. In the sixth chapter, a question is asked by Maharaj Prickett having to do with the final verse in the fifth chapter, where it describes, as Madhavendra Prabhu said, that Rishabdev had all the mystic powers, but despite having those, and despite those being ready to serve him, he did not use them. Now Parikshit Maharaj asks a question to Sukadev Goswami. He says, "My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, those who don't have any false ego, who don't have any anartas, knowledge is attained by practice of bhakti yoga, and attachment for fruitive activities is completely burned to ashes. There's no tendency towards self-centered activities. For such people who are pure, as Rishabdev Maharaj was, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress, nor does one have to attempt to avoid them, because one is pure in heart." So then he asks his question, after making these statements, because these are within, the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam describes that these are within the actual soul, naturally has these potent powers. So why then did Rishabdev not use them? Why did he neglect these powers? He was already pure, and there was no question of him having any impurity. He was completely detached, and it was actually incredible how he was living, completely detached from his body. So why didn't he use those mystic powers? Wait, you can never tell if that's some Bhagavad Gita or somebody's mobile phone going off. I think it's harmonium. We're going to read the next verse and find out the next verses, because 1 to 5 or 2 to 5 answer that question. Why didn't he use his mystic powers? And the answer is deeper than just why didn't he use his mystic powers. Here's his answer. Sukadev Goswami replies, "My dear King, you have spoken correctly that there was no harm for him. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's actions." Very interesting, important, intelligent instructions. What's the summary of those instructions in one sentence, or in 5 words or less? Yes. Except I was going to interchange the word "my" for "the." Don't trust my mind. Don't trust the mind, even if it's being good at this particular moment. Why? Because it is like a wild animal. And a wild animal, when caged, may be very docile and appear tame, but when it has the opportunity, it will run and escape and act in its normal animal way. So similarly, the mind has that tendency. Does anyone have this experience? No, yeah. When was the last time you had this experience? The mind is incredible. It's incredible. It's powerful. Prabhupada says at the end of his purport, Lord Rishabhdev refused to manifest mystic yogic perfections, and Maharaj Prickett asked why he did not accept them, since for a devotee they're not at all disturbing. A devotee is never distressed or satisfied by material opulence. He's neutral. This is how a devotee views the world. The world, nirbandha krishna sambandha yukta vairagya uchate. Neutrality. There is no aversion to the material world in the consciousness of a devotee, because aversion means attraction. Neutral, but yet he didn't do it. Didn't use these. A devotee's concern is how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If by the grace of the Supreme Lord a devotee achieves extraordinary opulence, he utilizes the opportunity for the Lord's service. He is not disturbed by the opulence because he doesn't think of it as his opulence meant for him to enjoy. He is not the center, because to be a devotee means that when one thinks of oneself, one thinks of oneself in relationship to serving Krishna. Text 2. But yet, still, Rishabhdev did not use them because of his mind, or because he was teaching about the mind. My dear king, well, that was actually to the first verse. Second verse, purport. Even one who has renounced the world and has taken sannyas should not renounce the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Renunciation does not mean that one has to renounce Sankirtan Jagya. Similarly, one should not renounce charity or tapasya, from the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. The yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. Lord Rishabhdev showed how severe types of tapasya could be performed, and he set an example for all others. Now, we're going to hear later in the chapter about the kind of we heard already in the last chapter, but we'll hear even more extreme cases of what Rishabhdev Maharaj did as he went on, because he wanted to show something very, very, very specific. He wanted to show that the soul, the body, the mind, they're all separate. And one can be fully satisfied getting his happiness from the soul platform and completely neglect the mental and physical platforms. We cannot imitate, but yet we should note this very carefully. So Prabhupada in these first two purports has said, first of all, first thing, in that the first purport, that a devotee, he is not afraid of opulences. To please Krishna, he uses them in Krishna's service. Second purport, he said that renunciation doesn't mean to renounce those things that are of one's devotional service, such as chanting Hare Krishna. A devotee should not renounce chanting Hare Krishna when thinking himself renounced. Third verse, all the learned scholars, this is Sukadev Goswami speaking, have given their opinion. The mind is by nature very restless, and one should not make friends with it. If we place full confidence in the mind, it may cheat us in any moment. Even Lord Shiva became agitated upon seeing the Mohini form of Lord Krishna. And Subari Muni also fell down from the mature stage of yoga's perfection. So deep, important warnings are given by Rishabhdev Maharaj and explained more clearly still by Sukadev Goswami. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The first business of one trying to advance in spiritual life is, who will read the next five words? Six. Is the first business. Well, is anyone going to do it? To control, the first duty is to control the mind and senses. This is what Rishabh Dev Maharaj was teaching. Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam shudye brahmas sokyam tvanantam. That human life is meant for controlling, tapasya, not for svid bujam ye, enjoying life on the level of animals. So the first business is one of one trying to advance in spiritual life is to control the mind and senses. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, Mamai Vangso, Jivaloke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, Manasastanindriyani, Prakriti Stani Karshati. Although the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and are therefore in a transcendental position, they are still suffering in this material world and struggling for existence due to the mind and the senses. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sharanagati says that it is due to a wicked mind has brought me to this world. A wicked mind means averse to Krishna. Krishna bhule se jeev anadiya bahi mukh, and surrounding that wicked mind is the wicked false ego. Or the other way around. And then the mind just gets attached to the sense of enjoyment in this world, and it is indeed wicked. It keeps itself in the center, although it is not at all the center. Krishna is the center. This is the business of the wicked mind, to keep us in the material world. So to get out of this false struggle for existence and become happy in the material world, one has to control the mind and senses and be detached from material conditions. Quite amazing, unpopular statement, to be happy in the material world. First of all, the way Prabhupada usually speaks is you cannot be happy in the material world. But here he's saying that to be happy in the material world, what does one have to do? Control the mind and be detached from material conditions. Why? Because the material world is out of control. You can count on it to do exactly the opposite of what you want. You make your plan, and you can count on the material world. It will let you succeed for some time, but then, boom, in some way or another, boom, pop, the bubble of me being the controller popped. We can count on the material world. In this way, the very nature of the material world is our greatest friend, because it's dukkhalayama shashvatama nitya sukham loka. It's our best friend because it ruins, pops, crushes our illusion that we are the center of existence. One should never neglect austerities and penances. One should always perform them. Lord Rishabhdev personally showed how to do this. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.17, it is specifically stated, Matva svasas duhitrava naiva viktasano bhavet balavan indriya gramo vidvam samapikarsati. A grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, and brahmachari, all the varnas, should be very careful when associating with women, and vice versa, women with men. One is forbidden to sit down in a solitary place even with one's mother, sister, or daughter. In our Krishna consciousness movement, it has been very difficult to disassociate ourselves from women in our society, especially in Western countries. We have therefore sometimes criticized. But nonetheless, we are trying to give everyone a chance to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and thus advance spiritually. If we stick to the principle of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, what's the next word? Offenselessly. Then by the grace of Srila Haridas Thakur, we may be saved from the allurement of women, Prakriti, thinking oneself Purusha, the enjoyer, and trying to enjoy the member of the opposite sex, which is the embodiment of the false ego. The actual false ego's business is to entrap us in this specific way, making another soul within a body appear to be the object for our pleasure. But that soul is not an object for our pleasure. It's an object, that soul is for Krishna's pleasure. Not an object, conscious, and for Krishna's pleasure. So we are taking the position of Krishna and therefore entangling us, ourselves, in repeated birth and death. So therefore the verse that quoted, Manasyastan Indriyani Prakritistani Karshati. So the protection for this? Offenselessly, purely. Otherwise, the material energy is too powerful. Text 4. An unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours, and it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. What word strikes? So the doubtlessly, doubtlessly. For sure, nischoy, certainly, it will happen. If we don't control our mind, the mind will cause our spiritual death. So very important instruction, and therefore Maharaj Rishabdev's teachings were very strong, very black and white. Prabhupada's purport, second two-thirds. A spoiled woman being manipulated by paramours might even kill her husband. This example is given here because a yogi desiring to get free from material conditions must always keep his mind under control. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in the morning our first business should be to beat the mind with shoes 100 times. And perhaps for this purpose one should get a pair of those wooden shoes. And before going to bed, to beat the mind 100 times with a broomstick. Has anyone ever done this? Made this attempt? I figured you would have. It's just, it means criticizing again and again and again. You rascal mind, you're making it small. Because otherwise it overpowers one. At any moment it can be very, very, very good. And then suddenly, rawr! So therefore, keep it small and intimidated. That's the point. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. An uncontrolled mind and an unchaste wife are the same. An unchaste wife can kill her husband at any time, and an uncontrolled mind, followed by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion, an untrained mind followed. This is what follows. This is the very nature of what the mind will do if given free rein. It will be followed by lust. And when the lust is not satisfied, anger comes. And lust cannot be satisfied because it burns like fire. And then when one gains something, one gets greedy and mad, insane, due to one's greed. And then one sees that someone dares to have something that we don't have. Can you imagine the nerve of someone? how much foolish audacity they have to possess something that I don't have and I want, and therefore envy comes. And then deeper and deeper illusion. These can certainly kill the yogi. When the yogi is controlled by the mind, he falls down into the material condition. One should be very careful of the mind, just as a husband should be careful of an unchaste wife. And the last verse on this point. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to fruit of activities. What learned man would put faith in the mind? Purport. The mind is the original cause of material bondage. It is followed by many enemies, such as anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Savai mana Krishna padala vindayor. Why is that the best way to control the mind? Yes, and?
Same point. Of.
Yes, but there's something, some other little thing in there that Mataji hinted. Yes, that there is a sweetness in the taste of a different caliber. There's a sweetness of a different caliber when the mind is engaged in spiritual activities, when the mind is engaged in Krishna's name, when the mind is engaged in Krishna's Dhamma. When the mind is engaged actually in Krishna's service, not just working, but the mind is engaged in serving with devotion, seva, there is a sweet taste that has nothing to do with the material world, and it is very relishable. So therefore, the most safe position for the mind is to be always, somehow or another, the mind always engaged in Krishna's service. Since the followers of the mind bring about material bondage, we should be very careful not to trust the mind. The Bhagavad Gita speaks some verses about the mind. In what chapter? Especially six is the one I'm thinking of. One must deliver himself with the help of the mind, 6.5. And not degrade himself. Udared atmanapmanam natmanam avyasayadat atmaiva atmanor bandur atmanai atmaiva ripuratmanat. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and its enemy as well. When it's attached to some holding on, it only does two things. It's attached and it rejects. So when it's attached to spiritual things, it's our friend. And when it rejects spiritual things and it becomes attached to a material thing, it's our enemy. And the mind is such an amazing creature that in 1 second, the same thing that it was attached to, it can reject. And one could be attached to chanting, and then a sense object comes into one's mind and boom! Chanting finished. Who cares about that? Why was I ever doing that in the first place? This is the mind we're dealing with. Second verse. For him who has conquered the mind is his best friend, who controls the mind when the mind is peaceful in the mode of goodness and he places it at the lotus feet of Krishna. So for one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy because it becomes attached to something that's going to bring us terrible results. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. For he has attained tranquility. For such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are the same. Another verse. Yato yato nischarati manas chanchanamastiram From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. This verse is the key to chanting attentive japa. And it's not easy. It just, the determination has to be there, and then one just has to do this work. And the last two verses, Arjuna says, O Madhusudan, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable to me, for the mind is restless and unsteady. The mind, chanchanam hi mana krishna, this verse defines what the mind is usually like. Chanchanam hi mana krishna pramati balavan dridham. The mind is restless, chanchanam, turbulent, obstinate, and very, very, very strong. O Krishna, and to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. Did you ever try to control the wind? And Krishna's answer is, Asam Sayam Mahaboho. It is undoubtedly very difficult to control the mind. Mano dur nigram charam. It is undoubtedly very difficult to control the restless mind. But abhyasyena tu kanteya vairagyena chagriyate. But it is possible by suitable practice, abhyas and vairagya. Detachment. If one is not detached, it's impossible. If one doesn't become detached, because the mind will hold on tightly, so therefore we must continuously hear, we should think about the prospects of material life. Is it possible for me to be the first person who succeeds in enjoying sense objects? Perhaps, but I may doubt it, since all the evidence speaks to the contrary. So one has to become convinced of this point. It is simply not possible to enjoy within the material world. Adyantavantakantaya nateshu ramate buddha. Everything has a beginning and an end. We want something eternal. And then we die and we get sick. And our knees hurt and our teeth fall out and one joint after another starts aching, can't digest, can't see, can't hear. And we're going to try to enjoy and be peaceful and happy, and then despite our attempt, we're kicked out quite mercilessly. Quite mercilessly, despite our attempt to stay, claiming we want to stay and like it in our decrepit body. And then we're mercilessly kicked out, forced out. And we want to enjoy here. Now the topic of Rishabhdev continues. So the answer is very clear. And the mind is the key to Rishabhdev's teachings. And he teaches very strongly so that we focus our minds on Krishna, on devotional service, and not upon enjoying this world, which is basically the essence of Rishabhdev Maharaj's teachings. So Lord Rishabhdev, text 6, was the head of all kings and emperors within this universe. So he was powerful, incredibly, practically unlimitedly powerful in the world. But assuming the dress and language of an avaduta, he acted as if dull and materially bound, like a retarded, mentally challenged person. Consequently, no one could observe his divine opulence. He adopted this behavior just to teach yogis how to give up the body, completely detached on the physical, mental, intellectual level. And yet, completely satisfied, remaining always in that state. He gave up his pastimes as Lord Rishabhdev within the material world. If following in the footsteps of Lord Rishabhdev, one can give up his subtle body, that's what he basically did. Kapila Muni describes in the third canto, there is a gradual dissolution of the subtle body. The subtle body is where the mind's desires are kept, like one's financial wealth is kept in a bank account. Our desires are kept within the mind. And when that mind is dissolved, there's nothing keeping us in the material world. It's all kept in the mind. Our karma practically stored in that mind. In the form of desires, manifest and unmanifest. And again, what is this based on? What is the material mind based on? Yes, exactly. So the cure is real ego. So therefore, in the Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is possible simply by keeping oneself an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. This is the essence. And what's that is called Sharanagati or surrender. Or Sharana. It means surrender. I am Krishna's. Krishna is mine. Not superficially, but deeply. Prabhupada continues. So it's so simple in one sense. This is possible simply by keeping oneself an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. This is it. In one sentence, everything has been summarized. Simple to understand, yet oh, so difficult to do. One must understand his constitutional position. That word is very interesting in there. One must understand, not feel primarily, but first understand through the intelligence. We must become convinced that this is what I am. I'm a servant of Krishna, unavoidably. Nothing I can do about it. I am a servant of Krishna. And one must understand his constitutional position and the constitutional position of the Supreme Lord as well. He is constitutionally he's the Supreme Lord constitutionally, and we are constitutionally insignificant. How does it feel when you think you're insignificant? Well,
nice.
Yeah.
Because if I'm insignificant, my responsibility also very significant.
It doesn't seem to work like that in spiritual life, though. When you realize you're insignificant, your responsibility becomes great. But the problem is realizing we're actually insignificant. That's the problem. And therefore the material world becomes our best friend in this regard. Because all our false ego, either today or tomorrow, it will be our pride will be smashed into powder. Fine powder at that. The material world is so wonderful in that way. We have no hope to keep our pride. Yet, we continue. We are noble in our attempt. Both the Supreme Lord and the living entity have this spiritual identity. Maintaining oneself as a servant of the Supreme Lord, one should avoid birth, rebirth in this material world. If one keeps himself spiritually fit and thinks of himself as an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, he will be successful at the time he has to give up this material body. Okay, Krishna, it's time. You want me to leave now? I'm your servant. Where do you want me to go? Dhanmani, Dhanmani, Swaray, Bhavat, Tad Bhakti, Rahi, Tiki, Tray. You want me to be born here? You want me to be born there? You want me to be born in the spiritual world? You want me to be born in China? You want me to be born... Whatever you want, I'm yours. I have signed the contract already. And then, if one is in that position, then there is no anxiety, even at the time of death. Very easy to understand, very difficult to do. Because of, we could say many things, material desires, false ego, insincerity. So we need mercy. That's my conclusion. We need quite, at least I need mercy. Although Lord Rishabdev had no material body, but due to Yoga Maya, he considered his body material, and therefore, because he played like an ordinary human being, he gave up the mentality of identifying with. He completely gave up the mentality of identifying with his body. And following this principle, he began to wander all over the world. While traveling, he came to the province of Karnataka in South India and passed through Kanka, Venka, and Kutaka. He had no plan to travel this way, but he arrived near Kutakchala and he entered a forest there. He placed stones within his mouth. Why? What's the purpose of placing stones within your mouth? Huh? Yes. Did you ever see anyone who had done that, Patri? Huh? Control the mind too. Speech. And then when you try to do something on the physical level, then you have to control your mind too. So he began to wander through the forest naked and with his hair disheveled like a madman. While he was wandering about, he had no mental platform. No, he had dissolved, even from the point of view of how he was acting, like as if a jiva. He had no mind. Just it was him. No attachment to the body, no attachment to the mind. While he was wandering about, a forest fire began. This fire was caused by the friction of bamboos, which were being blown by the wind. And that fire, the entire forest near Kutakchala, and the body of Lord Rishabdev was burned to ashes. And then Prabhupada, the verses, this verse 9 through 12, talk about the Jain religion, because they consider Rishabdev Maharaj their originator and this arhat. But they're impersonalists and they have their own philosophy. Their philosophy is very non-violent. Sometimes they're called digjam. Sometimes they don't, like Rishabdev, they don't wear clothes at all. Sukadeva Goswami continued speaking to Maharaj Prickett. My dear king, the king of Kanka, Venka, and Kutaka, whose name was Arhat, heard of the activities of Rishabdev and imitating Rishabdev's principles, introduced a new system of religion. Taking advantage of Kali Yuga, the age of sinful activity, King Arhat, being bewildered, gave up the Vedic principles, which are free from risk, and concocted a new system of religion opposed to the Vedas. That was the beginning of the Jain Dharma. Many other so-called religions followed this atheistic system. People who are lowest amongst men and bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord will give up the original Varnashrama Dharma and its rules and regulations. They will abandon bathing three times daily and worshipping the Lord. Abandoning cleanliness and neglecting the Supreme Lord, they will accept nonsensical principles. Not regularly bathing or washing their mouths regularly, they will always remain unclean. They'll pluck out their hair and following a concocted religion, they will flourish. And during this age of Kali, people are more inclined to irreligious systems. Consequently, these people will naturally deride Vedic authority, the followers of Vedic authority, the Brahmins, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the devotees. In Prabhupada's purport, Prabhupada explains, he can't, because he's talking about these concocted Kali Yuga lifestyles, so therefore he talks about the hippies. The followers of King Arhat went under the name of Jains, and they were later followed by many others, particularly the hippies, who are more or less offshoots of Mayavad philosophy because they think themselves the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it was a fact in those days, everyone's concept of spiritual life was that we are God. We are all God, but we have forgotten. So, an offshoot of basically Mayavad philosophy. 11. Low-class people, due to their gross ignorance, introduce the system of religion that deviates from the Vedic principles. Following their own mental concoctions, they automatically fall down into the darkest regions of ignorance. Because, at least by following the Vedic principles, one can enjoy on the material level and one is elevated spiritually. In this age of Kali, people are overwhelmed by the modes of passion and ignorance. Lord Rishabhdev incarnated himself to deliver them from the clutches of Maya. Learned scholars chant about the transcendental qualities of Lord Rishabhdev in this way. Oh, this earthly planet contains seven seas and many islands and lands, of which Bharadvarsha is considered the most pious. People of Bharadvarsha are accustomed to glorifying the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his incarnation as Lord Rishabhdev and others. All these activities are very auspicious for the welfare of humanity. So this is specifically the piety of Bharadvarsha of India. The tendency to glorify the Lord and his incarnations. When that is lost, when that tendency is lost, the piety is lost. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, there are many pious persons in the world, but the people of Bharadvarsha are even more pious. Throughout the world, there's no question of Bhagavad Bhakti or devotional service, but the people of Bharadvarsha can easily understand the devotional service of the Lord. They naturally have faith in the deity. They have naturally have faith in Shastra. They naturally have faith in the holy names. So therefore, it's quite easy for them to make advancement. You have to, in the West, to get a Westerner to have faith. You wonder if Westerners can ever have faith. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, not just speaking about Westerners, said, I wish every tender-hearted member of the Gaudiya Math be prepared to shed 200 gallons of blood to make someone into a devotee. In other words, be ready to sacrifice. It takes that much to convince someone to take up Krishna consciousness seriously. And Prabhupada's mood was certainly that. Text 14 continues glorifying Rishabhdev. Oh, what shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata, which is pure and very much celebrated? In that dynasty, the Supreme Person, the original Personality of Godhead, descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free one from the results of fruitive activities. Who is that mystic yogi who can follow the example of Lord Rishabhdev even within his mind, completely detached from the mental platform and the physical platform? Who can do this? Lord Rishabhdev rejected all kinds of yogic perfections which other yogis hanker to attain. Who is that yogi who can compare to Lord Rishabhdev? He wasn't slightly allured, not the slightest tinge or tendency to try to grasp anything based on false ego of this world, completely detached. Sukadev Goswami continued, Lord Rishadeva is the master of all Vedic knowledge. Human beings, demigods, cows, and Brahmins have already explained his pure transcendental activities, which will vanquish the sinful activities of all living entities. This narration of Lord Rishabhdev's pastimes is the reservoir of all auspicious things. Whoever attentively hears or speaks of them, following in the footsteps of the Acharyas, will certainly attain unalloyed devotional service at the lotus feet of Lord Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Listen to this purport. The teachings of Lord Rishabhdev are for the people of all yugas. Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and especially Kali Yuga. These instructions are so powerful that even in this age of Kali, one can attain perfection simply by explaining the instructions, following in the footsteps of the Acharyas, or listening to the instructions with great attention. If one does so, one can attain the platform of pure devotional service to Lord Vasudev. The pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees are recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, those who recite these pastimes and listen to them will become purified. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. As a matter of principle, devotees should read, speak, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam persistently, 24 hours daily if possible. That is the recommendation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should either chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or read Srimad Bhagavatam and thereby try to understand the characteristics and instructions of the Supreme Lord. In this way, one could be fully aware of the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, one who knows the transcendental nature of the Lord's birth and activities attains liberation from material bondage and returns to Godhead. Devotees always... This is text 17, and there are 19 texts. Devotees always bathe themselves in devotional service in order to be relieved from the various tribulations of material existence. By doing this, the devotees enjoy supreme bliss and liberation. And liberation personally, and liberation personified comes to serve them. Nonetheless, they do not accept that service, even if it is offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. For the devotees, liberation, mukti, is very unimportant, because having attained the Lord's transcendental loving service, they have attained everything desirable and have transcended all material desires. And now, in a very interesting verse, Sukadev Goswami says, My dear King, the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasty. He is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and the director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means he works just like ordinary servants do. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily, but he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him. So in the previous verse, a glory of devotional service was given. And what was that glory given in 17? Right in the beginning of the text. Yes. All material, if one takes to devotional service, all one's tribulations disappear. So this is very attractive to conditioned souls, because the opulence of someone in this world is his tribulations. He has so many of them. Everything is a tribulation. So the next verse describes something even more wonderful than that. That not only can one, by devotional service, get free from material life, that's nothing. Also, text 17 describes that. But that's nothing compared to the actual result of devotional service. And that actual result of devotional service is described in the relationship between the Pandavas and Lord Krishna. He becomes so intimate a relationship. This is the actual result. With that all attractive, supremely sweet, supremely wonderful, supremely beautiful, supremely powerful person, who's also supremely renounced. Yet look what this person does. He's supremely renounced. Rishabhdev Maharaj showed that supreme renunciation. Krishna is supremely renounced, but yet he acts in relationship to his devotees, the Pandavas, as spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, director of activities. He serves the family as a messenger, as a servant. He drives the chariot of Arjuna. He works just like ordinary servants do. So this is incomprehensible. Where is there a concept of God anywhere like this that's so developed? Where is there a concept of the Supreme Lord, the All-Powerful that's so developed as this? That one can have the most intimate of relationships with Him and conquer, control that supreme, all-powerful, uncontrollable, ajita person by the process of bhakti, devotion, by the process of love, by devotion, by devotion, by devotion, by devotional service. Krishna reveals Himself in His most intimate features, which otherwise He keeps completely hidden. Why? Because unless one has deep devotional service, deep devotion, deep bhakti, one is not trustworthy enough, practically speaking, to be intimate with Krishna. So Krishna keeps somewhat distant. But to those who love Him completely, He doesn't keep even the slightest bit distant. He becomes purchased. Naparyeham. He becomes purchased by those devotees. So the hint of that is here. Prabhupada's purport. And there's other things meant as well. While instructing Maharaj Prickett, Sukadeva Goswami thought it wise to encourage the king, because the king might be thinking of the glorious position of various royal dynasties. Especially glorious is the dynasty of Priyavrata, in which the Supreme Lord Rishabhdev incarnated. Similarly, the family of Uttanapad, the father of Dhruva Maharaj, is also glorious due to King Prithu's taking birth in it. The dynasty of Maharaj Raghu is glorified because Lord Ramachandra appeared in that family. As far as the Yadu and Kuru dynasties are concerned, they existed simultaneously. But of the two, the Yadu dynasty was more glorious due to the appearance of Lord Krishna. Maharaj Prickett might have been thinking that the Kuru dynasty was not as fortunate as the others because the Supreme Lord did not appear in that family. Neither is Krishna, Lord Ramachandra, Lord Rishabhdev, or Prithu, Maharaj Prithu. Therefore, Prickett Maharaj was encouraged by Sukadeva Goswami in this particular verse. Now listen to this again. The point being, who is most glorious? Through the process of devotional service, the devotee becomes more glorious, more powerful than the Supreme. How could someone be more supreme than the Supreme? Through devotional service, the impossible is possible. So after describing those dynasties as being so glorious, the Kuru dynasty may be considered more glorious due to the presence of devotees like the five Pandavas who rendered unalloyed devotional service. More glorious because they control Krishna. Although Lord Krishna did not appear in the Kuru dynasty, he was so obligated to the Pandavas' devotional service that he acted as the maintainer of the family and spiritual master of the Pandavas. Although he took birth in the Yadav dynasty, Lord Krishna was more affectionate to the Pandavas. So all this hints, if he was more affectionate to the Pandavas, what to speak of most affectionate to the residents of Vrindavan. By his actions, Lord Krishna proved he was more inclined to the Kuru dynasty than the Yadav dynasty. Indeed, Lord Krishna, indebted to the Pandavas' devotional service, sometimes acted as their messenger, and he guided them through many dangerous situations. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit should not have been saddened because Lord Krishna did not appear in his family. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always inclined towards its pure devotees, and by his actions, it is clear that liberation is not very important for the devotees. Lord Krishna easily gives one liberation, but he does not so easily give one the facility to become a devotee. To get liberated, all one needs to do is control one's mind. It is that simple. I mean, not that it's simple to control one's mind, but that's the only task to become liberated. That's all one has to do, control one's mind. But to be a devotee is something on a completely different level. One needs so much more than that. That is a beginning step. One needs something that one cannot even get on one's own. Muktim gadatti karishit smabhakti yogam, directly or indirectly, it is proved that bhakti yoga is the basis for the supreme relationship with the Supreme Lord. It is far superior to liberation. For a pure devotee of the Lord, mukti is automatically attained. And then the final verse, and then we'll read the purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhdev, was fully aware of His true identity. Therefore, He was self-sufficient. And He did not desire external gratification. There was no need for Him to aspire for success since He was complete in Himself. Because what He did appears to be sadhana, but He was already above sadhana. He was already the Lord. Those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions and create an atmosphere of materialism are always ignorant of their self-interest. So there's a contrast set up here between Rishabhdev, who was self-realized, and ordinary materialistic people who don't know their self-interest. Rather, they think what's in their self-interest is fulfilling material desires. So why did Lord Rishabhdev act the way he did? Lord Rishabhdev taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the Lord who appeared as Lord Rishabhdev. Prabhupada's purport, and then we'll read the last part of the last paragraph summarizes things. This is the summary of this chapter. So this verse summarizes the whole chapter in which the activities of Lord Rishabhdev are described. Being the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Lord Rishabhdev is complete Himself in Himself. We living entities as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord should follow the instructions of Lord Rishabhdev and become self-sufficient. We should not create unnecessary demands due to the bodily conception. Rishabhdev just wandered around. not needing anything. That is what self-sufficient means, not requiring anything from an external source. So we could say that Krishna is the only one who could be self-sufficient because he's the Supreme Lord. But self-sufficient for a living entity means himself and his relationship with Krishna. So we don't actually need anything else. This is what Rishabh Dev Maharaj taught. Nothing else, nothing, not one other thing on the physical or mental level. So we should not create unnecessary demands due to the bodily conception. When one is self-realized, he is sufficiently satisfied due to being situated in his original position. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmabhuta Prasanatmana Sochiti Nakanchati. This is the goal of all living entities. Even though one may be situated within this material world, he can become fully satisfied and devoid of hankering and lamentation simply by following the instructions of the Lord as set forth in Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. Satisfaction through self-realization is called Swarupananda. The conditioned soul, eternally sleeping in darkness, does not understand his self-interest. So Rishabh Dev Maharaj's teachings are to awaken us to our self-interest. He simply tries to become happy by making material adjustments. But this is impossible. This point is so hard to deeply and practically realize. It is not possible to become satisfied, happy, by making adjustments on the material platform, on the physical or mental platform. It is not possible. And Rishabh Dev Maharaj came to show specifically that it is not required. That was his teachings. Prabhupada's purport continues. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nate Vidu Svatagatim Hi Vishnu. Due to gross ignorance, the conditioned soul does not know that his real self-interest is to take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Not making adjustments on the material platform, but taking shelter of the lotus feet of Vishnu. That means making the lotus feet of Krishna our shelter. Shelter means, what's another word for shelter? Yes. Another English word for shelter.
Refuge.
Gotripte varanam tata. This is where bhakti actually begins. When we are established in making the lotus feet of Krishna our refuge, our shelter, our hope, our aspiration, and our mind doesn't go anywhere else. This is the beginning of bhakti. From that platform, love develops. To try to become happy by adjusting the material atmosphere is a useless endeavor. Useless in the sense that nothing will happen, but it will not bring the happiness we long for. Useless in that sense. Indeed, Prabhupada again says, it is impossible. By his personal behavior and instructions, Lord Rishabh Dev enlightened the conditioned souls and showed him how to become self-sufficient in his spiritual identity. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 6th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Activities of Lord Rishabh Dev. This is what Lord Rishabh Dev was teaching. Don't try on the material platform. I don't know if there's enough time to go through all of the verses in his teachings. But we can see how they really only lead to this. We could summarize them in a few different categories. One, who is human form of life, should not work hard day and night for sense gratification. So don't try for sense gratification. Try for the higher platform. How to do that? One can attain the path of liberation from material bondage only by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personality. So the process of going beyond matter. Next, those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness, increasing their love for Godhead, don't like to do anything not related for Krishna. So don't, again, take part in the material world looking for happiness there. Not that we can not deal with the material world. We're realistic. We deal with it in a practical way. We know our limitations. We know our level of advancement. But it shouldn't become the shelter of a devotee. A devotee may look like he's doing the same things as a non-devotee, but his consciousness should be different. His shelter is different. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic. So showing the foolishness, that was text 4, showing the foolishness of going seeking material shelter for happiness. As long as one doesn't inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and resulted and gets so many miseries due to ignorance. When the living entity is covered by ignorance, he does not understand who he is. So until one has love for Vasudev, quickly moving to the other side, who is none other than myself, one's mind is going to be full of these material desires and these material shelters. And then one, those adishtam manashtam visha upasevate, then one is going to be forced to take birth after birth after birth after birth. So don't do this, don't do this. Even though one may be learned and wise, he's mad if he doesn't understand that sense gratification means death for him, like a foolish animal. And what is the root of the sense gratification? The Purusha Bhav that comes from the interaction between male and female, Matuni Bhav, on the physical level especially. The false ego is based on that. Avoid that. When the strong knot in the heart of a person implicated in material life is slackened, then one becomes renounced and one can give this up. Then more on the process. And in the process, there's given here, there's 10 to 13, there's 4 verses. Some of them are directly bhakti, some of them are supportive of bhakti. But the purpose of them all is to become established in the real ego, real identity in relationship with Krishna, to love Krishna, and the other parts are meant to help us give up false ego, and therefore he says, don't be attached to the process of liberation itself. Be attached to the essence, which means love for Krishna. And if one is serious about going back home, back to God, he must consider the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead the chief aim of his life. Not these material things. 16. Due to ignorance, again, the material person doesn't know anything about his self-interest, the auspicious. And he plunges into material happiness, trying to be happy on this level, and attains only suffering. And how, text 17, how could someone who has some knowledge not help those in ignorance who are wandering along this terrible path? No wise or kind man can allow this. And one taking any position in this material world of responsibility, guru nasasyat, one should be able to deliver his dependence. One should become knowledgeable how to do that. And then Rishabhdev said, my body is completely different. My heart is spiritual. This is starting to get in the Lord's relationship with his devotee. The devotee's business is to love the Lord, and the Lord's business, his nature is to love the devotees. And if you just, interesting here, if you just, he gives him an instruction, serve Bharat, who is an exalted soul, and if you do this, your service will happen automatically. Your ruling will happen automatically by my grace, because you'll be serving me. I'm instructing you to do this, you follow Bharat, you're serving me by that instruction, and by my grace, your service will go on automatically. And then there are some verses talking about the Brahmins, or different qualities of levels of living entities. The highest being him and higher than him, the Lord says, is the Brahmins. It's quite similar to, again, Kapila Muni's teachings. And then ending, you should not envy any living entity, moving or non-moving, because I am in them. Offer respects to them at every moment, in this way you offer respect to me. So the consciousness is not pantheistic in any way, it's Krishna-centered. And then the conclusion is fully engaged in my service. And unless one does that, if one serves Krishna fully, one goes to him, and unless one does that, one is entangled in the material world, birth after birth. So this is all the teaching. It's very, very simple, actually, his teachings. Material world, spiritual world. Devotional service. Love me. Know who you are. Know you don't belong in the material world. Don't get involved in material activities. Be a devotee. Develop your devotion. Be detached from the world of matter. But he did it in such a stream in a detached way by his personal example, just to teach that it is indeed possible to be fully detached and be satisfied, because there are so many poor people in the world, there are so many mad people wandering around with disheveled hair. In the West they lock them up, in India they let them wander. But the internal is the real thing. The internal shelter. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. Questions, comments?
I have a question regarding the mind. Dealing with the mind. Perhaps explain it a little bit. Maybe a little complex. You know, when dealing with non-devotees, common people, and explain the four principles, sometimes the first reaction is, that's not so difficult, you know, I can do it for a day, you know, it's difficult on the long run. So in a practical application, you know, then for one day I can not do that, but on the long run it's a difficult thing. Now, the difficulty I see is that we keep that desire that we want to do it. That's the challenge. And as we discussed, when you explained the desire is by you having a taste within us of the higher realization.
And faith. The Bhakti Lata Beej means Shraddha. Yeah. Faith, it means Rati, too, taste.
Also a conviction that there is nothing to gain in this material world.
But that in and of itself is not bhakti. It could be cynicism.
Yeah. My question is, there are the identification, I'm a servant, an underlying awareness, and then from there having a desire to want to fight material desires, conquer or deal with the mind. Within that, I'm a servant, one may have different internal impetuses. And I could think of one, for instance, I'm a servant, therefore I'm very busy. I have no time for engagement in dealing with material desires. I just keep myself aloof and be very active.
That's a part of it, yes.
Yeah, I identify one like that. Another one could be like, I need mercy, I need purity. I need to get purified. And therefore, I want to control my mind and get the mercy of the Lord. So one busy one was, but another one I thought of is the example of Giriraj Maharaj, who was told he was sitting with a lady in a car and she tries to seduce him, but he was thinking, if I would do that, that would be such a disgrace to my spiritual master.
He never told me about that.
But that's somebody's inside one. Actually, isn't that there's a story like that? That he was going to a collection and they tried to have a fall, cause him a fall down, so they arrange that he sits with a prostitute, basically.
Where was this?
In Bombay.
Really?
Yeah.
Conspiracy.
He was establishing Krishna consciousness, and some people tried to stop that, and they thought, okay, let's get him down, and then the whole thing will stop. Something like that. So they tried to, but his mood was, I couldn't do that. Impossible for me to do that. Because Prabhupada would be very, very displeased.
Because he's a servant.
Yeah. So amongst the three identities, I'm a servant, I'm a busy servant, or I don't have purification. Or I don't want to create any troubles to my spiritual master, be a disgrace in the movement and so on. Which one would you say is healthy or is a kind of...
They're all okay, but the real one is... When, if your identity is a servant, that's all. It's hard to, in this age of Kali, when no one wants to be a servant, it's hard to understand what it's actually like to be a servant. A servant, when he thinks of himself in relationship to his master.
Their service is not causing distress.
It's who he is. I'm a servant. He hasn't asked me to do this. How can I do it? I do what's pleasing my master, to my master. That includes the other ones.
But one could be taking priority. For instance, I know Newton or great people that were very busy and they also determined not to engage in sensual activities. They were celibate and controlled. Very busy, very active. So, is that... In the realm of devotion, service is also an option that a person...
Yes,
active.
It's practical, but the real one is I'm a servant of my of Guru, Sri Guru Angaranga.
And I keep myself busy.
But the real one is deeper than I keep myself busy, because if you keep your, if that's the level you're only working on, it's quite dangerous. But if one really has himself fixed as a servant...
Self-realization, or I'm a servant, that identification or that recognition
it's
has to come in.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah, I think that helps me.
Well, servant, it's so, this is the most difficult thing, to be simply a servant. Because there's no false ego.
Whereas in the busy part, it would be false ego. And maintain glory and people for that.
So many things.
Identity.
But yet, being busy is very important too, especially in the beginning. Srila Prabhupada said that that was one of the techniques he learned from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But really, it should come to being a servant. What did
you? Tati Chumra just says something very powerful and very sweet at the same time. He says that we have to also remember that we're a very insignificant sort, and the process is not to try and fight the material energy, but to surrender to the internal energy. So that then you're not fighting upstream, you're actually staying with the flow.
And the internal energy means taking shelter of that, means following the order of the master. Yes?
In material world, in societies, people usually develop their identification as roles in which they are needed for society, for example, in which they are recognized as useful members of society, so they easily identify themselves. But it's very difficult to develop identification with servant until you are recognized or needed in that service.
How about a recognized servant?
I'm just like trying to understand if like spiritual master is helping to develop that identification by encouraging disciple, but without spiritual master, that encouragement just on your own is just difficult to identify, because no one needs it.
And no one needs what?
Your service or your...
Everyone needs his service. I'm not sure what you mean.
I'm just trying to understand the role of spiritual master who by his encouragement can actually increase identification.
But better to try to understand the role of disciple. I don't mean to be cute in saying that, but no, that we take a service and accept it fully as a,
as a servant, servant accepting service. And that's part of your identity. He's asked me to do this.
But in the beginning, the disciple doesn't have a direct relationship with the Lord, so the only person who will actually...
I'm talking about the spiritual master. All the Vaishnavas are.
Without Vaishnavas, we have no chance.
Yeah, we don't develop a serving mood. And indeed, if we try to serve the deity and don't respect the devotees, it's or the other devotees, it's prakriti. Kapila Muni explains.
Just to ask, because here, he rejected one of the mystic powers. I was just thinking of the story from Ruchitanya. He instructed Nanda Sadhiram to bless people with his mystic power, and then was about, seems rhetorical,
Rishabhdev Maharaj was teaching something. He was teaching something very specific. I don't know also that pastime of Ramdas Abhiram, but Rishabhdev Maharaj was teaching something very specific, and we should learn the purpose of his teachings. Don't trust the mind. So if Mahaprabhu gave Ramdas Abhiram Thakur a different type of instruction, it was for a different purpose. Rishabhdev's purpose was to tell you and me not to trust our minds. So you have to look at the context, you pull out the instruction and see that the instructions will be different and non-contradictory. Okay. Quick one.
On this first fire, in which we should let her burn, we can burn to ashes. Jiva Goswami explained that the gross bodies of all the jivas in that forest, the tree and all, were burned by the fire. But their soul bodies were taken by Vishadev. So everyone was liberated in the forest.
Rishabhdev's mercy. Okay, thank you very much. Shrima Bhagavatam ki jai. Maharaj Rishabhdev ki jai. Guru Prabhupada ki jai.